Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
So there's a saying that says we're good people and bad people. And so I would ask everybody to not be a good person anymore. Because when you're a good person, like, okay, let's say that I want to be a good person, so I'm a good person. But I did something that a good person wouldn't do. So now I have to justify what I did so that it still lets me be a good person.
Well, that's a little different than we're used to hearing it, isn't it? Hey, this is Judy with the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. That is Lyle Wilds, the brain coach, and we are on week two. So the second half of my conversation with Lyle. And he's going to continue his story talking about the research that he did, figuring out why some people left prison and stayed away and why some people came back and what they were doing differently that they, the prisoners, felt made that shift. And of course, Lyle's going to talk more about our brain and more things that he's learned and sharing with us how our brain works, how we can work with our brain to have more of the life that we want. Let's head right back into that conversation and you can find out why you shouldn't be a good person.
And I can start to see the difference in me and I can start to feel the difference in me. So the thing that really struck my attention was while I was in prison was there were people who would leave and there were people who would leave and never come back. So people who left and came back, people who left and never came back, I talked to the people who left and came back. And so they would tell me why they came back. They were always a victim. I got associated with this girl. She was on drugs. And so I started to say to myself, well, now I know what not to do, but I don't know what to do. And so I started to track all the people who took my class. I taught it to like 1,000 people that took my class. And I followed them. I wrote to about 460 of them, 466 of them to be exact. I wrote to them and said, so if you're not coming back, what changed? And they started to tell me how their values changed, what they valued, and how their beliefs changed. And one guy said, you know, I value my kids and I value my wife. And if I really value them, I wouldn't be in prison anymore. But if I value, you know, instant gratification, telling her what to do, being mean to my kids, I will be back. And so I started to talk to the people who were taking my class, the new guys coming to take my class, about the people who weren't coming back. And the people who were coming back, what they said. And it was really an eye-opener, because the people who weren't coming back had a good set of values, and the people who were coming back had a good set of values, but they also had values that caused them to sabotage their lifestyle of the good values.
Can you throw some examples out of that?
Yep. So for someone who came to prison, they had structure, they had instant gratification, power, control. Those are pretty common amongst people who are in prison. Actually, pretty common amongst everybody. So the values that they had, so they were able to exercise their brain in a way and reframe the situation so that they didn't sabotage their success. Just picture this. Most everybody who gets out of prison gets a job. Most everybody who gets out of prison gets in another relationship. And so it isn't that they can't do it. It's that they know the skills to get into a relationship. They know the skills to get a job if they want to. They know the skills to become a drug dealer. They know all those skills. So if you know those skills and it gets you some success, then in order for you to keep that success, you have to stop the violators that's caused you to lose your relationship, lose your job, lose your apartment. And so when I saw that the things that would cause them to lose their apartment was always having to be right, you know, I'm just smarter than most people, you know. And, you know, I've been in the service, and so I know that structure. If you don't have structure, you'll never succeed. And so you can just see how these, that they can keep in check until they get a little bit of success and they have a little bit of power, then they let these go wild. And so I can give you a perfect example. Let's take a neurologist who is doing brain surgery, and he's got a team that's helping him do it. So the team says, okay, here's our core values as a team. We're going to be structured, orderly. We're going to be right. We're going to be persistent. We want perfection. I mean, this guy's brain, we got to be careful. It's got to be perfect. And so he gets done with the surgery. Everybody goes home. He goes home. He's got a wife and three kids. He walks in the door, and the house is a mess. And he goes, oh, wait a minute. This isn't brain surgery. This is a family. And so when you have a family and you have a wonderful wife and you have three kids, the house will be a mess most of the time. Your wife will be happy, and you get to come home and play with them. And there's no problems. Mm-hmm. But the other neurologist, he goes, he does his surgery, he comes home and the house is a mess. And he walks in, and as a kid, his dad beat him because his room was never clean enough. And so he walks in the house, and he sees the house a mess, and he says, you know, you don't do anything all day long, the house is a mess, the kids are going to fail, you know, we're just going to be, our whole thing's going to go to hell and there's nothing I can do. I don't know why I even married you. And then the next morning he gets up and he regrets saying that. She says about 9 months later or 2 years later, she says, you know, Brian, I'm sick of this, I'm done. And so she divorces him. The other person, he's a neurologist and he's got the core values at work. And he comes home, and when he comes home, his dad was a Green Beret, and structure and order and perfection and all that stuff is important to him, and he was really drilled into it. So when he comes in the house, he sees this before and again, and this time he comes in and she comes around the corner and wants to give him a kiss, and he smacks her in the face and knocks her out. Now, all of us seem to have the same core values, and all of us seem to have the same violators. The importance of the violators, it was makes the difference between people who succeed and people who fail. And that structure of those violators is based neurologically. And so I say that the amygdala, you know, we can determine the size of the amygdala. And so variations in size of the amygdala can cause the spontaneity of you responding to an event. So if you walk in the house and the house is a mess, it's the same as if somebody pulled a gun on you. Mm. And you walk in the house and you see the house a mess, and you go, yep, there's my son. He's taking the puzzle all apart. We won't find half of the pieces, and it'll be okay. And so my job is to show how you have values that have caused you to violate the success that you have. It might be 15 years, it might be 20 years. But if you don't keep it in check, it'll grow because you're thinking about it. When you think about it enough, it becomes important. And the brain says, don't worry, I'll take care of this.
Sometimes that take care of doesn't work out so well.
No, it doesn't. And it's really too bad, too, because, you know, so let me give you another example. So right now we're finding that people who look at computer screens, mm-hmm. and cell phones. So when you're looking at your computer screen, you want to neutralize any activity around you, so you block it out. And so when you block out that activity behind you, you can focus right on the TV screen or the computer screen. Mm-hmm. So the brain learns that peripheral vision isn't important.
Ooh.
And so insurance companies will probably one day be asking how much time you spend on the computer. As a matter of fact, with the data they have right now, insurance companies can get that data, how much time you spend on the phone, how much time you spend on the... And we know that people who spend a lot of time on the computer hit more deer than anybody else.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Yep. That is so interesting.
Because you don't have a peripheral vision.
Sure. Right, or you're not exercising it. It's not getting the...
Brain says it's not
the
important.
Use. Wow.
Yep.
That's so fascinating.
So you drive down the road looking at a box.
Right.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yep. And so we also know that if you walk on sidewalks, like you walk on a concrete floor all day long.
Okay.
If you go out in your yard and play with your kid, you could hurt your back, you could hurt a knee, you could break an ankle, because the brain expects the ground to be level. Mm. And it does not have any awareness of a tilt, and so it doesn't have any strength to hold that tilt. hold against that till.
So Duluthians must be doing amazing, because walking down our sidewalks, our concrete floors through the skyways, we never get even ground.
That's right. Yeah. Only in Duluth does the earth just move.
Exactly.
Every day.
Yeah, we are on guard constantly.
I know.
The other thing is that when you get older, sometimes your back of your thighs, hamstrings,
yes,
they tend to tighten up.
Mm-hmm.
And as they tighten up, your legs will bend. They won't be straight.
Okay, sure.
And as your legs bend, you tend to bend over. And as you bend over, you tend to let your eyes go down and look in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we now believe that because the brain is looking at the soil or at the surface, and when you stumble, it doesn't know how to orientate itself. So elderly people will fall more often than other people.
Okay.
And if you would look at the horizon, the brain would be able to catch itself and hold itself up. But when you're just stumbling and the brain doesn't know which way is up, you fall.
Right.
So that's why it's really important to coach your brain and to understand that if you don't build a healthy relationship with your brain, find out what it's doing, monitor what it's saying to you, and then build a healthy relationship with other brains and know their triggers, you are up for habitual behaviors. If things start to repeat themselves in life, that's why.
Wow. So kind of always shifting and not getting into too many, you know, try to find the good habits,
yep,
figuring out what those are.
Yep.
So you talked a little bit about quieting the mind and paying attention to what we're doing.
The brain, sorry.
Habits.
Yep. New language.
What other tools do you maybe have, some things that people can be thinking about to sort of get into the space to thinking more about this and what they might do to help themselves shift or be in that new place that they want to be in that place of practice and aware, and, you know, with, like you're saying, being aware of what your brain is saying to,
yep,
you.
And you, what you're saying to your
and
brain.
And what you're saying to your brain. How do you, you know, find awareness in that and then shift that? When I think of what are the tools for that, I think of positive self-talk is something we hear, or positive affirmations. What tools do you have around that for shifting?
So the first thing that happens is that I think we have to be present in the present moment. So a lot of people have talked about that. But when you're in prison, you can't think about being in the present moment if it's a day long, because you just get overwhelmed with what's going down.
Mm-hmm.
So I picture being in the present moment as 2 seconds is coming into the speaker right now as we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking, and then there's 2 seconds leaving.
Okay.
So as we're here, there's a part of this moment that's not you yet, and there's a part of this moment that was you. Okay? And there's this moment that you are now, right now. So there's always a part of you that's not here yet, but it gets here, and then there's a part that what's here will leave, and we can only be in where we're at right now. So being in the present moment and knowing the body language or the body changing experiences. So you will have landscape changes, they're called. Dry mouth, nervousness, tension, your stomach's tight. All of those things, you don't acknowledge it. Like when we're sitting in this chair, we are not monitoring how much weight is on our buttocks or on our elbows with them on our chairs.
Mm-hmm.
The brain says that's not data. We don't need to worry about that. But if you will just remember that when the landscape of your body changes, you need to know why that's happening. And so what is the brain thinking and believing for it to say, this is something that I have to respond? If you're not going to stop me, I'm going to respond habitually. Okay? And so the way to do that is to be able to take just a moment, just this 3 seconds, just stop in this 3 seconds and say to yourself, so how could I see this event differently? And that would require you to reframe that moment. So, for example, a couple, I asked them to, the husband or the wife, I didn't want husbands and wives to do it, but there were a husband and wife in the room. And so everybody else was just strangers. But I said, so tell one of the other person something negative that happened in your life. And then I want the person who heard it to reframe it and say how that could be a good experience. And so the husband was telling the wife, you know, my dad, he didn't like me as much as the other two boys, so he made me stay in the house with my mom, and I don't know how to change the oil, and I didn't get to know how to change a hinge on the door. So when we have to call somebody to fix that, because I don't know how, I feel embarrassed, and I'm really been bothered about this for the last 6 years of our marriage. And so he goes and tells her this whole story. And when all done, she says, so she's telling us, they're telling us that this event. She said, so when we were done, I said to him, huh, this will be easy. She said, you know your brothers? I know both of them. They're both divorced. And she said, they can change oil. They can fix hinges. But she said, I could never, ever pay a man to treat me as nice as you do. And so if we need to fix a hinge, I'm willing to pay for fixing the hinge. And if we need to have the oil change, I'm willing to have the oil change. Because I'm telling you, Dave, that I could never find a man that treats me as nice as you do. And it's because you hung out in the house with your mom. And she helped you learn how to cook. You cook meals for me. You helped me clean the house. It's just something natural for you. And if we need to change the oil, we'll take it to our filling station and let them do it. And then we'll set in the filling station and hold hands.
Mm.
And aww. I said, you know, there it is. He had lived 6 years with that torture.
Right.
And then he's sitting there crying and she's telling the story. He said, I never thought that this would be a day that I would be able to break free of my fear that my wife was going to leave me because I couldn't fix a hinge.
Wow. What an interesting thing about what we believe about ourselves as being the husband or the man or the
yep.
what it looks like to be that yep. person.
So, you know, the real, when you say, what can you do? One of the things that what I would really ask my audience to do is to identify the beliefs that you have. So let me just give an example. So did you ever believe in Santa Claus?
Yes, I think I did.
Okay. And so if you believed in Santa Claus, you probably defended it. Probably told some kids, you know, oh, there is too a Santa, right? And then you got some data, and then you had to let it go because there's no Santa.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the belief in Santa, then you get some data,
mm-hmm.
and then you let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the beliefs we have, we don't let go of because there's not a day of reckoning when it'll be true that it's false. Santa has to be revealed because it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But if you have a belief, and when you think about the belief in Santa, you caught it. Nobody told you that.
Hmm.
And I want you to think about every belief that you have, you caught. And not only did you catch it, but you have a tendency to move those beliefs over into what's called the category of truths. And then you can start to defend it with yelling, insults, swearing, and violence. And that's what we've got to really take a look at. Because most of what we believe to be true is a belief. It's not true. So I'll go to prison for 20 years and it'll ruin my life. I went to prison for 20 years and it made my life a much better life.
It is kind of amazing when you think about what you've turned that 20 years into and going through that day by day of, you know, I mean, that's 20 years, that's a long time. I mean, I think back to the person I was 20 years ago, that's a lifetime ago.
Yep.
And to be in that space where you're right, you could just like, oh my gosh, give up. Or like you say, to be able to use it to your benefit and to use that time to get through each day.
So when I told you I was in prison for over 585 million seconds,
mm-hmm.
I was really only in prison for 3. That's the only length of time I had to live. As a matter of fact, that's the only length of time we get to live.
So everything is a new...
Absolutely. You can reframe the next second. Yep. So I tell you that there were moments I'd sit in my bunk and go, damn, this is just like more than I thought it was going to be. You know, and then I go, yeah, but I've already learned a lot. I don't have much time left. I'll never forget when I was 5 years short. Some guy came in with 3 years, and he said, "Man, I can't believe how much time I got. They gave me 3 years." I said, "Get out of the road. I've only got 5 left, and I'm out of here."
I only have 5 left. I love it.
Right? It's reframing it, right?
Yeah.
I said, "Your kids' hands aren't even going to change in size in the time you're in prison."
Mm-hmm. Wow. It's amazing.
But your life could change, you know, while you're in prison.
Yeah.
So what's really so... There's 3 things I would like you to always remember. One is that the brain is the organ of behavior. The brain is a learned organism and how to respond. So it's a learned process to how to respond. Third, the body is the brain support system. It can't do anything. You know, if the brain is paralyzed, the body is paralyzed from the brain, it'll starve to death. It has to have somebody else helping it. And so the other thing is that the brain is has plasticity to it, mm-hmm. and it can change. And so the way that the brain changes is gentle, consistent, positive activities that you do to become the person you want to be in a matter of, I would say, 6 months. You could trust that the brain would respond the same way. It's not 30 days to change a habit. It's not an event.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to be on total monitor about what the brain's doing so it doesn't default and you don't catch it. So if you just put your hands together like this, you know, put your hands just like you're praying, mm-hmm. like that, then you'll see that you have one finger up on top.
Mm-hmm.
So move the other hand up so that the other finger's on top.
Mm-hmm.
How's that feel?
Weird.
What does your brain want you to do?
It wants it to move back.
And so when you go back, it feels comfortable.
It feels normal.
Yeah. Yep. So if you change and you're this way for a while,
mm-hmm.
and you make a mistake and do it this way, your brain won't say, "Hey, you're just doing it the old way." It'll say, "Oh, here we go again."
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even tell you it's doing it differently. It's just like, back in comfort zone.
That's right. Yeah. That is powerful.
It is. It's very powerful. It's very powerful. It feels like if we could tap into some of these things and really figure out how to help our brain and us work together.
That's what it's about.
We can do so many things that we are struggling with.
So just picture this. We x-ray every organ of our body. We x-ray our breasts, our hearts, our lungs, our joints, our stomachs. But we don't x-ray our brains to see how they are. We do not x-ray our brains to see what health they have.
Mm-hmm.
And we can tell the health of a brain by x-raying it. It's MRIs.
MRIs, okay. That's
so you can, and you can determine its health, you know, by scanning it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to do that. I gave a speech to some 400 people in a mental health conference, and I asked the audience, how many of you would be willing to have your brain scanned and have somebody tell you the health of your brain? One really, like, older person in the back of the room raised her hand. Nobody else raised her hand.
Uh-huh.
I said, so how many of you would be willing to have your partner's brain scanned so you could see the health of their brain? And everybody raised their hand.
It's a little too vulnerable to have you looking inside and see what's going on in here.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, how fascinating though. You know, if you could promise everybody, okay, you'll get a team of people to work with, but we won't tell.
Yeah.
We have a lot more willing participants.
So they asked me when I got out, and I was doing, so I'm associated with Michael Mrzenich out of the University of San Francisco, who's made the brain games. He's with Posit Science.
Okay.
PositScience.com. And so about 65 hours it takes to do a computer brain exercise to actually create the neurological landscape to reconstruct it so you can see the activity is different.
Okay.
So like if you and I were going to learn to play the violin, and we did it, we do an MRI in our brains now, and then we practice the violin for 6 months, then we do another landscape, we will see where your neurological landscape has changed. And if we can change the neurological landscape to play a violin, we can change it to have compassion. We just need to practice.
We don't think about so much as we get older, right? We think about it with kids. You know, we tell kids to say they're sorry and all of that stuff, which I don't really think it works if the kid doesn't understand why they're saying they're sorry.
You know, it's really important when you say I'm sorry, it's not that you say I'm sorry because I hurt your feelings. I'm saying I'm sorry because it was the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. It's quite a difference.
Yeah, you're right. There's that difference of, well, I'm not really sorry for what I said. I'm sorry that it hurt your feelings, but I'm not really sorry for
That's
what
right.
I said.
It wasn't wrong.
Versus, right.
You're just
versus,
a little sensitive.
Right.
So there's one other thing that is a tool that you can really think about, and that is, so there's a saying that says we're good people and bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would ask everybody to not be a good person anymore. Because when you're a good person, like, okay, let's say that I want to be a good person, so I'm a good person.
Mm-hmm.
But I did something that a good person wouldn't do. So now I have to justify what I did so that it still lets me be a good person. And I sometimes will rationalize and wiggle in ways that people say, that's just not true. You're no good anyhow. And so if you don't think about being a good person, you don't have to stay in that category. What I would ask you to do is always try to be a better person.
Mm.
And so if you're going to be a better person today than yesterday, that's all you need to be. And so if you want to be a good basketball player, we don't know what that category is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to be better every day at basketball, we know where that takes you.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So if you want to be a good person, then you just reach that, and then there's nothing more to do. You're there.
Right.
But if you want to be a better person every day, now you have to be interacting with your brain, and you have to have a good relationship with it.
And I'm thinking it would shift the mindset if you're in the I'm a good person, and then I, like you say, do this bad thing. You realize you did the bad thing. You try to justify the bad thing. And there's a lot of feelings that go around, and gymnastics maybe that happen to justify that thing that you did as a good person, or you don't feel like it does, and now you're a bad person.
Yep.
Versus a person trying to be a better person who
did a lot of mistakes.
Made a mistake. Right. I heard Brené Brown talk about a story. I don't know if you know who Brené Brown is, but she's this amazing researcher. They had a dog, and she said the dog did something wrong, and so she said, you know, bad dog. And her kids said, Mom, the dog isn't bad. The dog just did a bad thing, you know? And she was like, you're right. That's, you know, totally true. But it's that mindset that we put on ourselves and other people, but it then puts us in this category then of having to defend and sort of earn back up to being
That's
a good
right.
person that you're constantly climbing and striving for instead
yep.
of... And it's so much softer and so much more of a way to accept and talk about what you have maybe screwed up or whatever, because
yep.
you can then do something that is a mistake or not quite in line with being a good person and still be a person trying to be a better person.
That's right. That's right. Yep. Yep. So life isn't a long marathon that you either win or lose. It's a whole bunch of short starts. And stops. Start, and then stop doing what you're doing till you can start again and do better. And so you'll notice that if you try to do better, you might only do better for like a day. But if you keep trying to do better, the next thing you know, it'll be like three years and you've been trying to be a better person.
Right.
And you'll see it. The brain wants to do just exactly what you want to do. You let it catch some stuff that's not to your advantage right now.
and it's recognizing that stuff.
It's recognizing that stuff, yeah. And then doing what it needs to do to put that stuff. It'll purge an old behavior. Like before we had cell phones, we used to have to remember phone numbers.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So if somebody changed their number, we could forget that number and learn a new number.
Mm-hmm.
That's plasticity.
Well, and I was thinking of the plasticity aspect of, like, you're talking about the computer screens. Our brain goes, okay, we don't use this peripheral vision anymore.
That's right.
So we can just drop it, and we're not practicing using it. So it's like, okay, I got other stuff to do. I don't have to worry about that
yep.
anymore.
Yep.
That is just so fascinating, right? Our brains can be plastic in great ways, and ways that serve us and ways that don't serve us.
Yep. That's why it's so important. Research is now telling us the more that we learn about the brain, the more likely we are to change our lives. So if you learn about your heart, you're more likely to take better care of it. So if you learn about your brain and realize you are suspended in a ball of nerves that cannot surface or appear anywhere else, and the brain says, if you don't talk to me, I will run the show.
Which just speaks to why it's so important for us to keep learning and keep understanding and keep thinking and processing. I always think of the concept, and tell me what you think of this, of letting stuff go, which I can think of as important, but I think of childhood experience that's old family stuff. Just let it go. Don't think about it anymore. It's in the past.
Right.
And I think of how nice that sounds, but how we still run on all of those patterns. And if we don't examine, and I don't know if this serves everybody, but I feel like for myself, re-examining things that have happened, you understand them in different ways, and then you can move forward differently because you understand how you were processing things and why you were doing something, and leaving all of that behind. And maybe there's times when that is fully appropriate, but leaving all that behind, sometimes then it gives you no, until you really have an understanding of who you want to be going forward or what that looks like, you're kind of again stuck in that middle place, it seems to me.
So whenever you say, I don't want to think about my past, the brain will think about it a lot, because it does not know the difference between should and shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
It only knows what you do. And so right now I shouldn't think about that. So if you're on a diet, like I did some talks for diabetes, and if you're on a diet and you want to watch what you eat, you should not say to yourself, I'm not going to eat cake, I'm not going to eat ho-hos, I'm not going to eat those things, because all the brain hears is eat. Mm-hmm. And so it needs to eat a lot. So if you say to yourself, I really like oranges, and I really like bananas, and I really like water. And if you say that enough, when you go into a store, your brain will notice bananas. It'll notice oranges. But if you say you can't eat chips, you watch how hard it is to not see chips in the store.
Well, you're adding validity to some of the things that I talk about in teaching my classes for pre-diabetes. I'm getting excited about the healthy foods, getting excited about the healthy things on the menu for the restaurant that you're going to go to, and getting excited about the foods that you do love that are healthy.
And how you talk about them.
Yeah.
Yep. So when you, it's really interesting. If you were to buy a car, when I bought my Prius, I didn't know that there were a lot of Prius. When I drove down the road in my car, everybody's got a Prius, you know?
Right.
And I never saw one before I bought it. Mm. And so your brain, if what you talk about, what you think about, is what will be, what it will notice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so...
Advertisers understand that really, really well, right? Yeah. I mean, and we don't have commercials for fruits and vegetables and things like that. We have commercials for junk food that puts it in front of our face all the time and makes us think about it.
Yep.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons when I lived in India and I stayed in an Ayurvedic hospital. And they said, do you want a TV? And I said, absolutely not. Because I'm on your food, your system for however long I'm here. And the last thing I want is to have commercials coming at me for foods I don't want to be thinking about. I want to focus on what's available to me here.
Yep. Yeah, so it's really interesting the way in which we think about what happened to us in the past. They say you can't change the past,
mm-hmm.
but you can certainly change the way in which it's framed in your head. So something that my dad did to me, I can say, boy, that really broke my heart when he did that. Or I can say, my dad certainly didn't know that was going to hurt me the way it did when he said that.
Mm.
And so it changes the whole thing. Now it's on my dad, and it's about my dad having a perspective about my dad that he didn't intentionally hurt me. Otherwise, you know, he was trying to drive me crazy. That's why he did that. He was trying to drive me crazy. He didn't like me. Look at the difference between those two interpretations.
Wow. Well, that's awesome.
That's what a brain coach does.
That's fantastic. So before we go and close this up here, what do you want to tell people about resources, either working with you or things that people might look at, you know, for themselves, or and how do you work with people, be it a person or a group?
So I like to talk to groups, large groups, small groups, and individuals. So one of the things that I would really want to say what I do, and that is that I have a process that will help clarify why there's chaos in your life. And I really want the people to hear me when I say that, because if you're addicted to chaos, or if you just like chaos, then you won't notice why the cycles are going round and round in your life, because chaos had become normal for you. And one of the things that's been important for me is that when I got out of prison, and I had always lived with a cellie, and I had to move into an apartment, a one-bedroom apartment by myself, I didn't know if I was going to need a dog or a cat or a plant, because I didn't know how to understand silence. And when I experienced it for the first time, I wanted to get up and go do something. But then I realized, this is what people pay big bucks for, is the silence.
That's true.
And so when I realized I can help people actually reduce chaos in their lives, and then they can take it from there and develop it out wherever they want to go with it, and especially in relationships, because relationships have to be defined, otherwise they just wobble. You know, if you don't know what you want from a person, how old they should be, how much money they have to make, you know, how touchy they are, how not touchy they are, what the values are for a relationship. I have asked thousands of people, so what's the core values of your relationship? So loyalty. And I said, so loyalty, huh? So if loyalty is a core value of your relationship, and your partner wants to go out with her girlfriends, and she wants to go to a bar where there's lots of single people, and she just wants to go there because it's fun and they dance, you might think that's not loyal. And she might think that there's no reason for you to doubt my loyalty. And so that is not going to work. She's not going to understand why you're jealous of her going out, because your definition of loyalty and hers are different. Yeah. it's really fun to see how powerful corporations spend thousands and thousands of dollars getting core values, consistent core values. And we know that America, they say, what are the American values? I ask myself, what are the American values, you know? And we're always being compassionate, we're always being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you know, but also get more, make more money, don't give a damn about your neighbor, you know, those are also the violators in our core values.
Right. They just don't look as pretty on bumper stickers.
That's right. That's right. I'm a greedy bastard. Get out of the way.
So if somebody wants to get a hold of you or to learn more about what you do, what's the best way to do that?
You can go to my website, which is Wildes, W-I-L-D-E-S, Wildes, wildesbraincoach.com, or you can call me at 218-260-8601. That's my cell phone, and if I'm not giving a lecture, I'll answer it. So thanks a lot. This is fun.
Yeah, thank you. It's always awesome to talk to you, and you always have amazing things to say there.
I like to talk to companies that are trying to figure out how to be safer, how to have safer environments, because a lot of the times the corporations have core values, but they don't realize that the brain, if it's neutralized its peripheral vision, it stumbles. People stumble a lot. So a lot of times it's back injuries, it's hand injuries, or it's stumbling. And so when you think about those are things that are a result of some of the behaviors that we have that we didn't realize. The brain just said, I don't need to worry about that anymore because you don't. And I always drive to work in a new way, at least once a week.
Oh, really? Well, that's interesting. Sure.
If you run and you run the same route, your body gets adjusted to it, your brain gets adjusted to it, and there's no change. It's no challenge to the brain or to the body. But you got to go the other way around, go up a different trail, do something different every week. So there's really a lot of evidence saying that if you don't do things differently, then you'll put your keys down, you won't remember where they're at. And people will say it's a senior moment, but it's not. It's a habitual moment that you just do things and don't watch what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing it differently, you got to watch. So one of the things that's, I've just closed with this, but the GPS.
Yeah.
GPS, they now are estimating that it's really doing brain damage to us because we do not have to look for Gray Street. We don't have to look for Elm Street. We just drive along, turn right, turn left, and so we're not looking for how to get any place. So our brain is just dormant in the car. We don't have to think. We don't have to look for anything. GPS tells it at all.
Yeah. Oh, that makes absolute sense to me.
So you get to the house, and you don't know how to get out because you didn't watch.
Right, right.
You didn't notice any of the houses. You didn't notice anything because you're just
on sort of this auto little robot. Do what the machine tells you to do.
So look, I'm only two blocks away. I got to turn right in two blocks. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Lyle. This has been fun.
Yep. Thank you, Judy. It's fun.
If you're interested in connecting with Lyle, I'll give you his contact information again. It's wildsbraincoach.com. That's WILDES, braincoach.com. And his phone number is 218-260-8601. The other websites that he'd mentioned was positscience.com. You can also reach them at brainhq.com. As he mentioned, he works with individuals, small groups, companies. He does public speaking in various places, so definitely worth checking out. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I hope you picked up some good stuff for yourself in here. And definitely check out the other conversations, wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can find all the other episodes, all the other conversations that we've had in different topics. When you're checking out the website, take a look on your left and you can enter your email to get that weekly email that we send out whenever we put out a podcast, let you know that it's there and links you right to it, makes it super easy. Thank you to all the people who have shared the podcast via Facebook, through the emails, and taking a moment to comment. You know, you can certainly, if you have a question for somebody that's been on the podcast, you can certainly shoot them an email. You can also put it on Facebook as well if more people might have that same question. So I definitely invite you to do that. I really want to take a moment and send out a huge thank you to the folks who have shared the podcast via the Facebook, their Facebook page, or sent the email forward, letting other people know about the podcast, people who might be interested, whatever the case might be, shared a subject that they were excited about. I really, really sincerely do appreciate that. It is how the podcast grows. And the more people we have listening, the more that information gets out, the more we create a community for all of this stuff. And that is really huge and so appreciated. Feel free to comment on Facebook as well and ask questions of me or suggest an idea for a topic. Or a question to a practitioner if you don't want to get a hold of them individually. That is totally wonderful and totally great. I also want to send out my gratitude to the folks who have supported the podcast through the Amazon option, which, again, doesn't cost you any money. But going to my website, going to the Support the Podcast page, clicking on something that you want to purchase or are curious about, whatever you buy in that trip, that shopping trip on Amazon, a little portion of it goes to support the podcast. So if you're doing your Christmas shopping, hit my website first, click on something. Again, don't have to buy it. But if you're looking to buy a new TV or a new bike or something huge, no cost to you, but a little portion of that goes in that fund to support the podcast. And that really is important and appreciated and matters. So thank you so much to the folks who have done that. It adds up and it's fantastic. So thank you so much. Consider supporting the podcast by going to wellnessrenpodcast.com. Click on the big red button on the left that says become a patron. And the process of becoming a Patreon member is very easy and very non-threatening, and it can be as low as $1 a month. You can check out the various levels and see if there's something there that excites you. And as I mentioned on last week's podcast, anybody who signs up for Patreon, I'll take you out for coffee, tea, conversation, and we'll have a good time. So, great opportunity to support the podcast. I have no idea if you think going out to coffee or tea with me would be a great opportunity, but hey, you never know until you try. So, on that note, thank you again for listening. Have a wonderful week. May you find many, many pieces that fit into your health, wellness, and well-being puzzle. Have a great day.